Welcome to Coaching the Whole Educator, the podcast that helps instructional coaches, teacher leaders, and school leaders. I'm Becca, former educator and school coach turned transformational coach of coaches. I'm on a mission to help you improve your educators' effectiveness and resilience, especially the ones who need it most. Each week, we'll cover quick tips, strategies, and coaching mindsets so that you can be on top of your coaching game. Are you ready? Let's dive in. Coaches, we know it might seem like a hassle to gather classroom observation data and be present during a teacher's lesson. What would it be like if that was done for you? The ability to see trends in things like student talk versus teacher talk, high quality questioning, wait time, and even grade level academic vocabulary could make a huge difference in upgrading the quality of instruction. Sydney has recently upgraded its coaching platform to include all of these capabilities using AI technology. All you have to do is capture video or audio of the lesson using your phone, and Sydney does the rest. How cool is that? And one of the things I love most about Sydney is that it all stays confidential on the platform. Visit sydney.com/TWE for your free trial, or click the link in the show notes. Hello, 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 coaches and leaders. I am so excited. I have an incredible author on with me today, Tim Elmore. He wrote a book that I read and I was like, this is such a good book. And the book is called The 8 Paradoxes of Great Leadership. We're going to be talking about it today. We're going to be talking about, like, I just love the concept that leadership is paradoxical, right? Yeah. That it's not just, you know, this follow these set of rules and it's, you know, it's one thing. So we're going to be diving into it today. Before we do that, though, I wanted to welcome you to the show, Tim.
Thank you, Becca. It's great to be with you today.
Yeah. So I would love you to share with everyone, what has been your journey that has, you know, kind of have you ended up here today writing about leadership, working with leaders?
My career began in the classroom. I began teaching students in 1979, and this would have been high school, and I was starting my grad work, so I was teaching college students as well. So I fell in love with students even when I was a student, mm-hmm. way back over 40 years ago. But fast forward, 1983, I went on staff with Dr. John Maxwell. So some of your leaders might be familiar with John's name. He's written a number of New York Times bestselling books. Mm-hmm. But I started with John before he was famous. And so I was really mentored by him back through the 80s and 90s. And my love of students and my love of leadership under John just got married. You know, you can imagine, I just thought, what would happen if we help these kids not just graduate well, but actually think like life-giving leaders, you know, and who had a high EQ, not just high IQ, when they took a position after graduation. So fast forward 20 years, I worked with John for 20 years. I started Growing Leaders in 2003. It's a nonprofit organization that what John does for business leaders, I wanted to do for schools and for kids. So it's really kind of next generation leadership.
Yeah. This is fantastic. So you mentioned EQ and IQ. And before we dive in kind of to the different paradoxes, I want to touch on that because you write in your book a thing I've been saying for years, and I'm going to read directly from the book. Okay. I think you just say it so succinctly. You say that you often tell your university students that success in school is 75% IQ and 25% EQ. And in your career, it will be the opposite.
Yeah, yeah. It's so true. Isn't it the joke that we always hear? The C students are leading the A students at the company. and certainly we want to do academics well. You would agree. We want to be as smart and insightful as we possibly can. But so much of life is reading cues from others and being sensitive and empathetic and then wise in our leadership to get the very best out of them. So I so believe that. I told my own children, they're adults now, all their life growing up, do well in school. But let me tell you what do well means in your career. It means you're going to read body language. You're going to pick up interpersonal cues and you're going to be wise as you relate to them. So yeah.
Yeah. No, I love that you wrote that. Thank you so much. So, you know, I wanted to talk about, first of all, what was happening that led you to actually write
this book, highlighting the paradoxes of leadership, not just a 1-2-3 of leadership.
Okay. Well, two big ideas. Number one, I really felt like leadership was often too cut and dry when it was taught. Mm-hmm. We all know, no, it's not that cut and dry. You don't do step one, step two, step three, and now you're a great leader. I just thought I need to dig deeper, getting past this either or world and see, could there be an answer in the middle? So I found 8 of these paradoxes. And the more I dug into case studies, the more I thought, oh my gosh, I think the answer is you balance paradoxes and you read your people before you lead your people.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And also ethics is also paradoxical, which is mind blowing in itself, but we're not going to dive into ethics today, but I just love even just this concept, right? Leadership is paradoxical, not black or white.
In fact, there's a psychological term that I talk about in the book, a paradox mindset or paradoxical mindset. Research shows that when leaders approach things able to balance paradoxes, they make better decisions and end up with better results. So getting away from the black and white, which we know isn't right, and exercising these, we become better leaders, period.
Yep. Research overwhelmingly shows this. So before we dive into the paradoxes, I'm a fan of non-example. So I'd love to hear when leaders are unable to live in the paradox, right? To practice these paradoxes, what happens?
Well, first and foremost, if any of us care about results, we're going to diminish the portion of the people that we can actually connect with and get results from. In other words, if you, let's just take personality. If you say, well, this is just my personality. I'm just a 3 on the Enneagram, or I'm just a choleric on the DISC profile. You know, I'm a high D or whatever. Well, if that's all you do and you cannot flex or adapt, you're going to be very limited in the people you can lead and coach and connect with. So that would be one major reason. If I care about results, I want to be get out of this unadaptable, unflexible, or inflexible mindset.
Yes, I love that. Read them before you lead them. You told me before we started recording this analogy of chess and checkers with leadership, and I feel like right now is the time to share with everyone because it very much relates to what we're talking about right now.
First of all, it may seem like completely weird to talk about chess and checkers, but we really do believe that when we teach leadership, it becomes stickier when there's a metaphor or an image. Mm-hmm. And so this is one of our habitudes. Habitudes are images that form leadership habits and attitudes. So think about those two games, chess and checkers. Both are played on the very same game board. So one could be tempted to think, must be the same game. Not true. When I play the game of checkers, all my pieces look alike. They all move alike. So I treat them all alike. When I play the game of chess, the only way I have hope of winning the game is I have to know what each piece can do. That a bishop does this, and a knight does this, and a pawn does this, and a king and a queen. You get the point. Only in knowing the strength of each piece can I win. I have come to believe that mediocre leaders play checkers with their people. They treat them all alike, and they get average performance. Great leaders have learned to play chess in the relationships of their life, and they connect with others at the point of their strengths and their personality. And those people flourish under their leadership.
I love this. I love this analogy. Chess over checkers. Yes. And what I find is when leaders are playing checkers, right, with staff in schools, sometimes what happens when they're using the same strategy with everyone and not everyone responds the same, what can happen is blame.
Yeah.
You're resistant.
No doubt about it. You know, the principle that we're actually talking about, Becca, right now, is something I put in my last book, A New Kind of Diversity. It's on generations. But I use the phrase, context explains conduct. Mm-hmm. So isn't it true if somebody does something that just is unexplainable and you are frustrated like you did? Yeah, I can't believe you just did that. What are you thinking? You know, that's sort of
thing.
Isn't it true? You start hearing the backstory. And even if you don't agree with what they just did, you at least go, oh, that explains everything. But context explains conduct. So I think coaches listening, leaders listening, just keep in mind, People will do things that aren't explainable and you can get frustrated. I do too.
Mm-hmm.
Best things I can do is there's another image, stethoscopes and treatments. I need to put a stethoscope up to them, not literally, but relationally, and say, mm-hmm. let me hear the heartbeat. Let me find out what's going on. Mm-hmm. Now my treatment will be much more insightful because I've got a little backstory on that person. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's really great. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. So I want to dive into the paradoxes. There's okay. 8 of them. And you and I chatted. I think there's 4 that could really be poignant for school leaders. And that we're going to talk about all 8, you know, but I wanted to dive into the 4 that we, you know, yeah. we were like, yes, these will really resonate. And the first one is great leaders have vision. And I may not get the wording exactly right, but understand their blind spots as well. They balance vision and blind spots.
Mm-hmm. Well, we all know certainly blind spots can ruin us. There's no doubt about it. We have story after story about, ooh, I had a blind spot and I didn't pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I found in this book, Becca, that the best leaders actually leverage both. Now, mm-hmm. we all understand vision. A good leader has to have a vision for the future. Mm-hmm. If you don't, you're just managing people. You're just, mm-hmm. you know, treading water.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with that, but let's admit it. That's just management, not leadership.
Yeah.
But I found the best leaders actually leveraged or used their blind spots to their advantage.
Yeah, I love that. You know, and it's ironic to say leverage your blind spots because inherently we can't see them.
That's
right. You know, so you have in that chapter, you have the 4 truths about blind spots. And I just want to read them because I found them poignant. I really like them. Number 1 is our blind spots are often found conspicuously close to our strengths. How
yes.
interesting is that?
Yep.
Blind spots may be undetected only to surface later in our careers.
Yep.
Our blind spots have little to do with our intelligence. Everyone has blind spots.
Yes.
Everyone. Right. I have them. You have them. It's a yep. human experience to have blind spots. And blind spots can serve to make us fearless, bold risk takers, which can be both good news and bad news for our leadership.
No doubt about it. Yep. You want me to just follow
that.
Back a little bit on that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, first of all, the first one I put in 1 because I noticed as I got accountability in my life for my own leadership journey, mm-hmm. I was noticing, oh, I do have blind spots after all.
They're, yes.
they're often very close to my gifts. We are not as, we're so intuitive in the area of our gifts, we feel like, oh, I don't see anything around them. I just naturally do that. It's kind of like the most natural hitter in baseball can't mm-hmm. teach hitting because he does it so naturally.
Yes.
Or she does it so naturally. So I think I invite accountability and say, please show me what my blind spots are because I won't see them in the area of my strengths. And then I love all 4 of those too, Beck, I got to admit. But that last one, oh my goodness, it does make us bold when we don't see what could go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why I need people around me. We have a habitude for that, sturdy guardrails. Just mm-hmm. like on a road, you need those guardrails where the road curves and there's mm-hmm. a cliff right there.
Yes, I love that, right? Really leaning on our team
yes.
to help us see some of our blind spots as well. So important because we inherently can't see them. So the next paradox I want to talk with you about is balancing being stubborn versus open-minded. And what I love is you use a word that I'm sure leaders are like, is stubborn ever a good, you know, a good quality? And you're like, no, it is, right? So I'd love yeah. you to share more about that. What do each look like and how does it benefit us to be both?
I love this topic. In fact, whenever I do an event and I speak on these 8 paradoxes, business, schools, you name it, they always want to talk about this one because they go, wait, stubborn, that's bad, right? In fact, you know, my case study on this one was Truett Cathy, the founder of Chick-fil-A, who passed away, but he was this. And when I talked to executives at Chick-fil-A and I talked to Dan Cathy, his son, Dan even said, could we use a different word besides stubborn? Could we use strong-willed? And I said, Dan, we could use strong-willed, but stubborn is such a an emotionally
charged.
It's just an emotional word. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Dan thought about it and he said, Tim, you're right. He said, my dad was the most stubborn man I've ever met and the most open-minded man I've ever met. Isn't that powerful? Mm. But here's the bottom line. I'll do this quickly. He was stubborn in the right handful of areas, and he's mm-hmm. open-minded on almost everything else. Mm-hmm. So really, this is about leaders choosing, where do I need to choose to be stubborn? And it's mm-hmm. not a lot, yep. especially in today's changing world. Mm-hmm. But so you really work on your open-mindedness, which we all need to work on. But you mm-hmm. choose those timeless, I think, principles or mm-hmm, convictions mm-hmm. that you need to hold to. Mm-hmm. Isn't that true? There's some mm-hmm. things, Becca, you should not compromise mm-hmm. on. You need
right. I love this. And I feel like this relates to the next paradox I wanted to talk with you about, which is having high standards and mm-hmm. having gracious forgiveness. Yeah. How cool is that?
I love how you love this principle. I do too. So listeners, there's a fine line between practicing this paradox and just fudging all the time and saying, oh, okay, you're forgiven. No big deal. Great leaders do not say no big deal. But right? there is a way to avoid that dilemma and still practice this paradox. So here's what I would say. These uncommon leaders are sticklers for excellence. Mm-hmm. In fact, think for just a minute, listeners, about the great organizations you know, maybe even outside of education, you know, Apple and Google and Zappos and others that just are, they're leading the way in their industry. They are sticklers for excellence. So they do not drop the standard yet when they have a team member, whoever it is, that's pushing to meet that standard and they fail, they don't just let them go. They just spend a lot of money training them to, you know, mm-hmm. so you forgive without dropping the standard. In fact, I think this is true about any industry and any leader. So these leaders keep the standards up, but they somehow say, if I see a team member push themselves, I mean, really push themselves to meet it, but they don't meet it. They say, all right, let's find out what we learn.
And I wanted to connect this to growth mindset culture. I know schools value operating under growth mindset, yeah. having a culture that supports that. And this principle, this paradox, yeah. speaks to it, right? So when we operate under a growth mindset, we are embracing our mistakes, taking yep. risks, being messy, and learning from them, right? And the way we learn from our mistakes is we reflect on them.
Yes,
we don't just
right.
inherently learn from them. All right. So the last paradox I wanted to talk with you about in depth is balancing being personal versus collective. And you said when the pandemic happened, right, yeah. this was the paradox that was so strongly highlighted in schools and just present, maybe.
Yeah. yeah.
So I just would love you to speak more about what that looks like. How do we balance both of those?
Well, during the pandemic, as we partner with schools, I found myself talking to both superintendents and principals that said, mm-hmm. I felt like I made a year's worth of decisions in 1 month. Isn't that true?
We were yeah. all,
mask, no mask, come in, don't come in. You know, I mean, I'm being silly here, but we were all just tired after mm-hmm. a month, after a mm-hmm. week of decisions. So this one actually was learned during the pandemic. I noticed that what leaders really needed to display to their people was, I have the big picture of what's going on. I've got during the pandemic, it was, I've listened, you know, Dr. Fauci or whatever. I got the big picture on the COVID-19 thing.
Yeah.
But they also had to display to their people, and I understand your personal struggle and story. Mm-hmm. So isn't this brilliant? And I'm not saying because I'm doing it great, but I learned during that period of time, people need me to say, oh, she gets it. He gets it. They mm-hmm. have the big mm-hmm. picture. They're watching the zones of this and when mm-hmm. it's safe to come back in and so forth mm-hmm. and so on. This is what makes people want to follow a leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. It's really great. And it truly is a balance for those. So this has been such an interesting conversation. I've really enjoyed this with you. And I think we have to wrap up. So I would love you to share, where can people find your work, find your books, find you?
Yeah, sure. Well, they can follow me on social media. It's @Tim Elmore. Growingleaders.com is our mm-hmm. work with schools. And then I do lots of keynotes, and you can simply find me at timmelmore.com. Becky, it's been such a joy to talk with you. It's so fun to meet like-minded people that just feel the same way and think the same way. So thanks for letting me crash your party today. It's
been yes, fun. Absolutely. Thank you for joining me. This has been a pure pleasure.
If you're interested in watching the full episode on video, feel free to check out our YouTube channel. We have a bunch of the episodes uploaded, and you can watch the full unedited versions, which are about 45 minutes to an hour long each. And as you are planning your summer and fall professional developments, and you're interested in growing the skills of your coaches and leaders in your schools and districts, feel free to reach out to us. We run professional developments. We do one-on-one coaching. We even have the Whole Educator Academy. And feel free to check out our programs on the website. And until next time, just remember, don't treat people the way you want to be treated. Treat them how they want to be treated. Take care.